Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me in on the line today is Clinton Matos.
Being in the studio is literally illegal, Brendan.
And we also have Robin Lee Chetty with us. How are you doing, Robin?
Yeah, how's it going, guys? Another long week, I think.
Yeah, I'm done with this situation at the moment. Can COVID please leave the planet? We're done with you. Thanks so much. It's been great. We've enjoyed having you around, but we're done now. Thanks very much. It was great knowing you.
Sound like Dr. Manhattan. I'm tired of these people.
Right, so let's jump into the news. Robin, it's not so much news, but you've been playing with a new toy, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I've been checking out Vodacom's newly launched 5G network. As you wrote at the beginning of the month, they launched in 6 new areas in the country. Well, clusters as they are terming it, and there are 20 live sites. So I've been testing it out primarily in the mid-range cluster because that's where I happen to live. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't live in an area that has the coverage, the 5G coverage necessary. I've been heading to Vodaworld, which just happens to be down the road, where there, of course, is going to be 5G coverage. I mean, Vodacom wouldn't not have 5G coverage at their own campus. So I've been testing it out. Vodacom were gracious enough to give us a device to test out the network on, the LG V50 ThinQ 5G. That's a phone that was released last year. Well, it was unveiled last year. It was released locally a couple of months ago. I took out on that device, as well as the Huawei P40 Pro 5G, which wasn't given to us by Vodacom. It was given to us by Huawei, but I thought might as well be worth testing it out. Two different 5G devices. And yeah, our first impressions of the network and the results from the 5G testing will be in a story we'll be publishing on our site very soon.
Can you give us a teaser? Is it any faster than 4G at the moment? Is the ping better? Give us something, man.
Some of the interesting things that I found. Huawei's device was actually faster than LG's device. I put that down to purely the fact that Huawei's modem, the Balong 5000, if I remember correctly, is, I guess, better geared than what Qualcomm's one was last year.
Also, I would say that 5G is kind of Huawei's expert playground at this point in time. Like, I think that they have the edge when it comes to developing that network, and then also they have the benefit of being able to have phones that they can put their tech into.
So I guess the testing was quite interesting just in terms of the difference between the two devices. I tested out 5G and compared that to 4G Plus or LTE in the same spot on Vodacom's campus on both devices. The difference with regards to the Huawei device, I did a few tests in 5G. The top I got was around about 223 megabits per second range.
Holy hell.
which I thought was impressive. But let me look at my figures here. I tested out 4G plus, I was getting 145 megabits per second. So it's obviously is a big difference, but I'm not too sure if you're necessarily going to experience that difference on a mobile device. I think perhaps more interesting use case for Vodacom's 5G network will probably be on the CPE side, especially considering what kind of coverage they have in the country at the moment. Yeah, just made for some interesting.
Cool. Well, we look forward to reading your report a little bit later today. It seems 200 megabit per second on a wireless connection. That's just absolutely mad. Clinton, what have you got for us this week?
Oh, my God. If anybody about the world ending, here's another one. The Snyder Cut is being released. Now, if you were in a Fallout shelter long before the pandemic happened, I'll give you a quick recap. Justice League released a few years ago, widely considered to be a train wreck. But despite that, it garnered a lot of fans. And this kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, a rumor, a groupthink, a push for release the Snyder Cut kind of came out of the ether. And the Snyder Cut is the sole vision of director Zack Snyder. He has basically alluded to the fact that there was a lot of interference and external problems plaguing the movie, which resulted in the final theatrical cut of the film not being as good as he had wanted to be. He said so many things over the years that there's hours of unused footage on the cutting room floor. The bigwigs at the studios wanted it to be a certain length, so that was cut out more. Of course, there were reshoots of the movies that added millions of dollars to the budget. There was the famous Henry Cavill mustache CGI fiasco. There was the whole thing with Zack Snyder actually stepping down from the movie from a little bit because of family issues he had. So it was just a plague movie. It came out, it was a train wreck, but people still firmly believe that there's some little nugget of gold. And if Zack Snyder can make his Snyder Cut, it will be all gold, right? So it was a rumor all these years, and it didn't look like it was ever being released, but now it's coming. It's coming to HBO Max, which is a streaming service not a lot of people really talk about, especially in places like here in South Africa, where we just don't get it. And it's not this year, unfortunately. That would make 2020 really something. But next year, 2021, it's going to come out. And all that's really been announced right now is that Zack Snyder is on board. A lot of the cast is on board. They're going to make it. It's going to come out sometime next year. But there's some substantiated rumors that it's not going to be just another 2-hour cut of the movie. It might be 4 hours long. What? Or it could be, I don't know what this is a direct quote, a 6-chapter TV style release.
Oh my gosh. So mini series, essentially.
Yeah. But
it's like the Irishman numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. It might actually be like the Irishman in terms of length of how it's going to be released. We don't know that yet. I'm sure we'll know more closer to 2021. But yeah, 2021 is still far away and we don't know when in the year it's going to happen. I mean, we could be more than a full year away. We could be 18 months away from this being released. But just the fact that it's been acknowledged and everybody has officially said it's happening is crazy. I can't believe it's happening. And it's just another crazy thing that has happened this year. You can check out my story, which will have both the official announcement and all the rumors from the Hollywood Reporter, which is usually a solid source when it comes to rumors. So check that out.
Man, it would really suck if this cut to the movie is worse than the actual movie.
It would be hilarious. It would be so funny. I don't even care if it's good or bad. I just want it resolved. And then
I think it would be funny if it was actually better.
Yeah, fair enough.
They went
through
all that trouble and spent all that money to make it seem like a Marvel film. And actually, the original one that Snyder had in mind was actually better. Yeah, we'll say, I guess.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if it's just whatever? People are like, what? It's not worse, but like it would be hilarious. I just want the whole saga to be over, and I'm glad people who genuinely care and who are not trolling are going to get their movie. I'm sure they're very happy about that.
If you can get HBO Max.
Oh, that's gonna hit the shady parts of the internet very fast, I assume.
Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like 1 femtosecond after it streams, people are going to be like, oh, well, I've seen it in a different place. Anyway, check that out and just, I don't know, go back into the bunker until 2021.
Right, so we got an update from Eskom this week regarding load reduction. What is load reduction? Well, apparently it's not load shedding. Load reduction is a system that Eskom implemented last week, in which high risk or power would be cut to certain areas during high usage periods or peak hours between 5 and 9 in the morning and 5 and 9 in the evening. So a couple of places have had power cuts, myself included, here on the West Rand. We had some power cuts last week, only for an hour or two, and then this week things just went haywire and substations blew up, mini transformers blew up. It's just been really, really bad. So Eskom has said that load reduction has had the desired effect. that the power system is responding positively to these power cuts, and it seems as if these this load reduction will be with us for the foreseeable future, at least until the end of the winter period. My concern about this, however, is that Eskom doesn't tell you when they're cutting your power. So your power goes out, and then you're like, well, what's happening? So you phone Eskom, you stay on the line with them for 30 minutes at a time, because obviously they are busy and they are running a skeleton crew because of lockdown. And yeah, you find out that, oh, the power's only going to be off for the next 20 minutes anyway. So it would be nice if they could just inform folks about how they are going to be doing this, how they implement it. Although I suppose that then brings it closer to load shedding and not load reduction, as this is called. So if your power goes up between 5 and 9 in the morning and 5 and 9 in the evening, there's a good chance that it is load reduction, but yeah, who knows? It could just be the power going out. But yeah, it's possibly best to get in touch with Eskom in that regard, and yeah, that's the state of Eskom. Yeah, it's
happened. I'm not an electrical engineer, but how is this not just a version of load shedding?
Well, because it's got a different name, Robin.
It just sounds like load shedding level 0.5 or something.
Yeah, it's just load shedding level 0.5. Because what I will say is that when this load reduction does hit, it's only for an hour at a time. So it's not like, oh gosh, I'm not going to have power to make dinner. Although in some instances that might be the case for people, especially if you get shut up between 8 and 9 in the evening. But yeah, it's I don't know how this is not different to load shedding, to be honest with you. It seems like load shedding to me, just under a different name and for a shorter period.
Yeah, it just sounds like marketing spin, just to try and show other people don't go into a crazy panic.
Yeah, load shedding is back.
I think they're doing it just so people don't panic and be like, oh, we have to deal with lockdown and load shedding at the same time. So they're like, oh no, it's not this, it's this.
It's just a rose by another name, thorny flower instead of rose. So yeah, just make note of that. We will have the story with detail and comment from Eskom's Gauteng Maintenance and Operations Senior Manager about how that system is getting along. And yeah, that's it from the news side. Let's jump into the meat of the podcast. This week, Minister of Basic Education Angie Motshekga briefed media and the South African public, I guess, at a press conference regarding the reopening of schools on the 1st of June. Robin, you covered that story. Perhaps you could give us a little bit more background in this regard before we dive into a discussion about it.
Yeah, sure. So education, specifically the reopening of schools, has been a contentious issue for the past couple of weeks during lockdown, and a lot of schools were left in the lurch as to how they should go about reopening the schools. A couple also tried to reopen early, but the Department of Basic Education urged them not to do so and advised that they will provide some kind of guidelines at a later stage. So that happened on Tuesday evening. So it kind of follows in line with what the minister outlined a couple of weeks prior to that office-based workers could return on the 4th of May, and that could be followed by school management on the 11th, then teachers on the 18th of May, and then finally students could do so on 1st of June. But it's not all students, we need to say. The Department of Basic Education conferred with the National Coronavirus Command Center as to how they should go about this. And now it's only students in grade 7 or students in grade 12 or matric. Those will essentially be the first wave of students that will be allowed to head back to schools. But again, this has also brought about a whole bunch of issues. Naturally, a lot of parents and students are worried about COVID-19, what steps schools are going to be making. And also it brings up another issue with regards to difference between private school and public school or government schools or perhaps schools in rural areas, how well equipped they are to actually handle the logistics and sanitization and teaching and getting through the curriculum at this time. Those are all issues that we need to unpack now.
Yeah, And I think that's probably a good place to start, is the difference between like your private schools, your schools in suburban areas, and then your schools in more rural areas. So I'm going to kind of throw back to my history a bit. I used to work for a company that did career guidance expos for high schools. And we used to travel throughout the country to as many high schools as possible to do career guidance expos. And in that, we would go to a lot of rural schools. And seeing these places firsthand where schools are just doing the best they can to get by, I do wonder, particularly on the note of having the resources in order to sanitize classrooms, keep kids apart, having Wi-Fi, that sort of stuff, I do wonder whether the government has put that into consideration. And it doesn't seem like it at first. Going back to our discussion a couple of weeks ago with regards to e-commerce, just seems like, where's the data here? How was this decision arrived at? Because a lot of these rural schools, they don't have proper like sanitation, you know. They don't have like your like proper plumbing. For instance, they still use pit toilets, and like that's a problem. Number one, because those places aren't really the most hygienic to begin with. And then the second thing is that if a school is in that situation, I doubt very much that it has the funds available to purchase stuff like sanitization, like your hand sanitizer, that sort of stuff, personal protective equipment. Beyond that, do those parents that send their children to those schools, do they have money to afford masks? Like, there's certain things that I'm starting to wonder about. And then particularly the decision for grade sevens. I understand that grade seven is a final year, but I do wonder about how prepared those kids are for going back to school. Like, matrix, I could say, yeah, they're 18 years old, they have a bit better understanding of how things work, but like a grade 7, I don't really know if they're versed in the things of like social distancing and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not just that they're 13, some of them are 12, and you're just not prepared to deal with this. I don't think most people are prepared to deal with this as adults. And now you're asking kids to go to school where, you know, I know the kind of joke is you just sit there and you kind of absorb everything, but learning is an active activity where you have to focus all of the time.
Mm.
If you're sitting there, you know, covered in PPE, I don't know how you're supposed to concentrate on learning and everything, because the sense of existential dread must just be terrible. And then there's other problems too. Like, you can train kids for a long time and you can lecture them about being safe and everything, but a lot of them are just going to be like, oh, screw you, I know better. Yeah. I'm 13. I'm going to go hang out with my friends in the back of the school. I'm going to not obey social distancing. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And I just think it's going to be a train wreck. I was going to save that for the end, but right now how they've announced it, it's not promising.
I was reading a news story about schools reopening in France, and I think already within the first couple of days they've had a spike in cases. So,
yeah.
Social distancing is going to be a real issue, especially in rural schools. You've got kids packed into crowded classrooms. How do you manage that, especially when you have a disproportionate ratio of teachers to students? It's just this media briefing that we alluded to at the beginning, that was meant to happen at, I believe it was 4 o'clock on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It got pushed back, to late in the evening, which immediately makes you think that something came up. We need to actually figure out this.
Yeah.
It just seems half-assed. And in my mind, it really seems like matric students are the only ones that should really be heading back to school, if any students should be heading back to school.
I mean, so
the fact that they worry about university entrance next year.
So I just want to point to a statement by the department that I was reading while you were talking, Robin. In terms of PPE and sanitization, masks, all that sort of stuff, apparently the department will deliver these to are doing deliveries of what they call COVID-19 essentials. in all provinces and that they are stored in safe places. But, like, does anybody remember the textbook saga of a couple of years back?
Yep.
I mean,
the tablet saga.
Yeah, I mean, we're sitting here now going, okay, so now you're going to do this. I mean, it's not to say that government won't do it, but previous instances where a government organization was depended on to provide school books, which I would argue is the simplest thing to do, is get kids school material so that they can study. If you couldn't get that right, how are you going to make sure that all of these schools have sanitizer, masks, water, PPE if needed? Like, how are you going to do that? Is there a plan for this? Is there something we can see to show that there are stops in place to check that this is happening? I mean, it's once again, we're sitting here going, how does this work? And this is a week after President Cyril Ramaphosa said that government would be a lot more transparent. How? I mean, we're sitting here, we have 1,000 questions that don't seem to be getting any answers. And like you say, Robin, the fact that the briefing this week was pushed back or pushed to a later time doesn't really inspire confidence, because like you say, it might have been that, oh, hang on, we forgot about this. How are we going to do this? Yeah, it's very, very concerning to say the least. And I mean, this, and like you guys say, this is you're now asking people to put their kids into a situation where the surface for infection is a lot greater. Like right now, you're not in school and going out. Like, I go to the shops and I get extremely nervous about what I'm touching. Like, it's literally, I when I go shopping, it's okay, I want this, I need to check this, I don't want it, but now I've touched it, I got to take it. Yeah. Like, it's sort of like chess, you know, if you touch it, you got to move it. And like, I'm a 32-year-old man that has to think, like, consciously make these decisions. How are you expecting a 13-year-old to do this? How are you expecting a 17 to 18-year-old kid to do this? Like, I'm not saying that kids are dumb, but like, I know what I was like as a teenager, and I knew everything about the world. I was unstoppable. And now I'm going to get a teacher telling me you've got to wear a mask at all times.
Yeah. And again, I just want to loop back to what I said, is that the kids are going to be sitting there in their chairs trying to concentrate on algebra and history and biology and whatever. And just in the back of their mind, this is going to be eating at them. And I just don't think that's a good learning environment. And you're just defeating the point, right? They're saying we need to go back to school to make up the time we lost. We need to salvage 2020, right? But if the kids are sitting there and they come home from school and their mom's like, oh, what did you learn today? And they say, I can't remember what I learned. I was sitting there worried about COVID-19. Then what was the point of even going back? It's just a waste at that point. And I really feel that's the whole encapsulation. They're so rushed to try and salvage something, but they might just be shooting themselves in the foot.
So I want to just talk about a story I wrote at the top of May regarding a high school here in the West Rand, Krugersdorp High School, and how they are tackling remote learning and going back to school. So one of the things that they said that they will do is when schools reopen, they will continue doing remote learning. So if you are a parent and you don't want to send your child back to school, you don't have to. You can continue doing remote learning. They will cater to those people. For the students that are going back to the high school, what they will do is they will limit the amounts of kids in a classroom. So for instance, there will be 3 kids in a class that are distance from each other in a proper way, that are wearing masks, classroom sanitized, all that sort of stuff. And the lecture will then, or the class will then be streamed to them via pre-recorded video by the teacher into that classroom, and they'll be able to interact with the teacher live in the classroom as well after the lesson. So they are making use of the school's Wi-Fi, making use of technical solutions online. It's a really clever solution to this mess that we're in at the moment. But I say this, and as I speak about it, I realize that this school is not the norm, right? They are a government school, fair enough, but fees at the school are very high. They're not affordable fees, and it's not a no-fee school either. You have to pay school fees to get into the school. And as cool as that idea is, like, what about a school in Tembisa? Like, are they able, do they have the resources to do this? And I would assume not, given what we know about some of the schools in South Africa. I would assume that they don't have these things in place. And for me, I kind of look at this and go, okay, so these matrics, how are you going to teach? Is one teacher going to go into a classroom with matric students, like three at a time, and then repeat the same lesson over and over again? Well, how is this going to work? Like, I don't feel that the department has put any thought into the fringe cases of schooling. Like, how schools where there is one teacher, there's no internet connectivity, there's no like, oh, go home and learn on your laptop, electricity is an issue. Like, I wonder, it doesn't seem like government has addressed these sort of fringe cases, and it concerns me because these are the things that will ultimately make or break this decision to reopen schools and decide whether we have a situation like what happened in France, Robin, as you mentioned, where days after reopening, there was a massive surge in the amount of infections at schools.
Something else I just want to point out, Brendan, is what you brought up is that idea for having some children in the class and some children remote is actually, I kind of like that, because you for people who do have internet connectivity and devices at home, they can remote in, and then the people who either don't have those things or prefer physical learning, you know, in person, it's a nice mix. But then I was thinking that creates a very weird kind of class structure inside of this school where it kind of seems like the people who are going into the class are poor. I don't know how to phrase this without sounding terrible, but it kind of seems like, oh, I don't have this stuff, so I have to go in and risk getting infected. You know, my friend Johnny and Bobby, they've got that nice stuff at home. They get to stay there and learn while not being infected. It creates a really weird class structure when you think about it for a while, and it's a bit gross. It's
cannon fodder.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, in my mind, I had a huge trip while you're talking. I went from, oh, that's kind of clever, to, oh, no. It's, oh my lord, yeah. And Robert, again, we have to say, we're asking these questions, we don't have answers, and we very much doubt government, the Department of Education, or even the private school, IB or whatever it's called. I don't think they know the answers either, to be 100% frank.
Robin, you wanted to pitch in?
I was just saying that another thing we need to consider is the conflicting messages we're hearing with regards to how the curriculum is going to be handled. I know the minister said that there's going to be changes to the curriculum. It's going to be shortened in some regards. And that information will be shared with schools at a later stage. But Umlazi, who handle the matric exams in particular,
yeah,
they said that the entire is going to be tested. So, yeah, it's really conflicting messages. And if I was a matric student right now, I would be so stressed out, and not only because of COVID-19, but also because I have absolutely no idea what's going to be happening with my exams.
Well,
and these are critical when heading to university.
Absolutely, and I mean, it's not just about passing; it's about understanding what you are being taught. Because from here, you go to university, so you cut down the curriculum. What are you cutting out? Because, like, the matric syllabus is incredibly packed. I remember from my time in matric, I didn't have a moment to go and smoke sly in the park, right? It was back-to-back assignments, tests, homework. Like, it was absolutely packed from beginning to end. Hell, I remember they even called our September holiday short because there was just too much to do. It sucked, but that's what we had to do. And now, like, you want to cut the syllabus. So what gets cut? Who's the person that's deciding what gets cut, first of all? And what happens to these kids when they want to go to university? Is their pass going to be graded differently to somebody that passed in 2019? Like, is the quality of education that these kids are going to receive now this year different to the quality of education they received in 2019? Like, there needs to be a lot more explanation about how these things, not just, oh, well, we're cutting the syllabus. How are you going to do it? We'll tell the schools at a later date. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't say, oh, we'll address this later, because the problem that is coming out time and time again with government and this lockdown is we'll address this at a later stage. And then it's addressed at the 11th hour and things are just like, whoa, what's going on here? Like the winter clothing thing last week. Like, why can't I buy a T-shirt? Like, explain to me does a T-shirt contain COVID-19? Am I more at risk of catching the disease if I buy a T-shirt? Like, explain to me the logic behind these things, but it just seems that government isn't doing that.
Yeah,
once again.
It feels like, mentioned it earlier, that government does has had a period of grace in the fact that this is the first time anything like this has ever happened to any country in the world. And you're kind of learning as you're going ahead. But the decisions that are being made will have massive impacts moving forward. You just think about the exams, for example. I wouldn't be surprised if we see record low pass rates as a result of all of this.
Absolutely.
And what then? Do you handicap students moving forward? Are they at fault for the fact that the pass rate is so low? It's the knock-on effects, I don't think, are really being thought about in a... Again, I think we mentioned it last week as well, that everything is reactionary and no one's trying to predict with greater accuracy what's going to happen. Yeah.
And the problem is that a lot of the syllabus, I know kids in school will probably say, oh, they throw darts to decide what we do. A lot of what's taught in schools has been informed by mistakes that have been made in the past. But because everything is happening so fast right now, there's no time to make mistakes, course correct. You know, maybe we'll do a survey and a big study to see how this all works. There's no time for that right now. I mean, when history books are written about this in a decade, in two decades or whatever, they're going to say, oh, you know, in hindsight, this was a terrible idea. How are we supposed to know? We can't. So it's just it's a bad situation all around. I just want to, I'm going to wrangle the conversation from you guys for a second. I want to talk about tertiary education. I have a unique perspective on this right now. I'm a last semester student at UNISA. I'm just doing a bachelor's degree. And, UNISA's been on a journey in his last 6 months. I'll do a quick recap. Yeah, that was the kindest word I could use. I'll do a quick recap just to give the listeners some detail about it to understand where I'm coming from. Basically, the start of the first semester of 2020 was, again, I'm using the word train wreck, because of UNISA themselves and not because of coronavirus. So, throw your mind back to late December and then January, February, before coronavirus was something that hadn't spread around the world yet and before that even reached South Africa. The registration for UNISA semester one were very late because the release of the exam results of semester two of 2019 had been delayed. I don't think they've ever officially said what happened to those exams and why they were specifically held back for so long. But the long and the short of it is that they were released very late. Students then registered very late. UNISA pushed back the registration date again and again and again and again. I think they pushed the date back three separate times, which is kind of ridiculous. And then off of that, they also pushed back assignment dates, because we had situations where by the time students were registering and they had their registration done and confirmed, they had a week or, you know, 10 days to gather their learning material and complete your first assignment. And I mentioned this in the past, but at UNISA, they've got a very weird system where if you don't submit your first assignment, you instantly fail the module. Instantly. There's no, you know, supplementaries for that first assignment. The way UNISA looks at it is that a lot of people register and they never take their modules. So we use this first assignment to kind of confirm that the people who are registered are actually partaking in the education. And it led to a lot of people being in that stressful situation, so they had to push back everything. And then coronavirus hit. So after all these delays, they now had to deal with the delays caused by the pandemic. Now, a lot of people are a bit confused by this, because UNISA is a distance learning university. It's, I think, the biggest of the kind in the world. And a lot of people thought UNISA won't be affected by the coronavirus. The students won't be affected because they're already used to studying from afar. And that's not entirely true, because a rather large amount of UNISA students travel to UNISA campuses, which are located throughout the country, to use the computers, to use the library. I know a few students in my various study groups who they didn't own the textbook for the modules they're doing, because the textbook was in the library and they would just book it out when they needed it. And when the lockdown was announced, all those campuses closed. So you had students of UNISA who couldn't get to a computer, to the internet, to the books they needed. And that was a massive problem. And UNISA didn't really address it until recently, when it was announced that the exams would be moved online. And this was another shock to people. Even though UNISA is mostly a distance education facility, they do require that certain things are done in person. And the biggest thing that is done in person is your final exam. And those are held throughout not just Africa, but throughout the world. I think there's even testing facilities in California the last time I checked, and in Ireland. So you need to physically take yourself to the it's usually a big hall. You need to sit down, you need to write your exam, and then that will get added to your year mark. I won't get into all of that. And they said, listen, we're going to do these online. But the big problem was, again, the students were going to these campuses to get online, and now they can't do that. So now we have the background. Now we can talk about the free data. We've mentioned this before. Mobile data in South Africa is extremely expensive. How can we get these students online? And UNISA has basically made a deal with MTN where they spent about 60 million rand over 2 months between mid-May and mid-June. UNISA students will get 30 gigabytes of data every month, and 10 of those will be anytime gigabytes, and then the 20 remainder will be at night. So now, right now, as we stand, the exams are starting. I think the official date is the 25th of May, which is this month, which is 3 days away at the time of recording this. And they will continue into early June. They usually end in July, but they had to push them a bit into June. So, yeah, that's what one university is doing. I know WITS, I was speaking to a WITS student. WITS students also got, I think, 30 gigabytes every month. So I just want to ask you guys, what do you think of this crazy situation where UNISA has kind of become not a trendsetter, but other universities are looking at UNISA and how they do distance education? What do you guys think of all of that?
Robin?
Well, I think that, I think the choice of MTN, I'm a bit confused as to how it works. Does that mean that only MTN UNISA students can have access to the service?
Yes, Brendan brought this up when he was also reading my story about this. You have to go, if you're not an MTN subscriber, you don't have an MTN SIM card in your phone, you need to go and buy an MTN SIM card to get this free data.
Okay. That's a big hurdle then.
Yeah, you need to physically leave your house and go get an MTN SIM card and have it registered and everything.
Have it re-kid. So that means that you need a
residence.
Okay, so the RECA stuff is not working exactly like that. I'll put a link to the story I wrote. Basically, the RECA will be handled by UNISA. It's very strange. Let me just get that up in the background while we talk here. But yeah, they are, I'm not going to say cutting corners, but they are doing some things to make it a bit easier.
Okay, so you just need to get it. You just need to get a SIM card then, essentially.
Okay, okay, so MTN will RECA the number against an authorized person at UNISA.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so the RECA is, yeah. So it's not the standard procedure that we're used to for getting a SIM card.
Okay.
It's a bit different. Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah,
that's
but
good.
It's still a massive hurdle, right? And a lot of people have said, well, what else could they have done? I don't know.
I mean so I kind of get it, because going to every single mobile network and every virtual mobile network operator, it's an insurmountable task, and having to negotiate a deal with each and every single one of them, I can totally understand why UNISA just went, or probably went to every single one and went to the person that offered them the best deal. the what I would do, however, if I were UNISA, is you have all of your students' contact information, probably also a home address. Send them a SIM card. Like, could that not have been negotiated into the deal as well?
Well, to answer that, I have to answer the question of, is UNISA... I have to be careful what I say here. Let me just say that in the past, even before coronavirus happened, UNISA has had massive problems with physical deliveries of other things such as textbooks and study guides and important materials. I don't think UNISA in its current capacity could have organized that in time for the exams. That's fair enough. Kind of most diplomatic way I can explain it, because UNISA has a lot of problems that have only gotten worse with the pandemic hitting. Mm. And this is another reason why I wanted to talk about this week, is because I interviewed the vice chancellor of UNISA and I asked him things like that. And one of the big ones was, if you call a UNISA number, any of them, it's actually quite ridiculous. If you go to their contact us page, they have about 100 different public numbers which you can call. All of them are supposed to be directed to the specific department you're trying to get in touch with, right? You can sit there, and I've done this. I did this when I was a first-year student because I had an important question I needed answered. I sat there and I phoned all 100 numbers, and I didn't put down the phone until it was put down for me. You know, when someone doesn't answer, eventually it will say, hey, your call's been disconnected automatically. Do you know how many of those 100 answered the phone? Just answered the phone.
I'm gonna guess one.
You close, Robin. Do you wanna have a guess?
I'm gonna go zero.
You're both wrong. You're both too cynical.
Two. Wow.
Yeah. So, and of those two, this is hilarious. Of those two, one of them was, I actually spoke to a person, and they said, "You've called the wrong place. You've actually called like the Northwest." Campus, I can't help you because you're in Gauteng. I'm going to connect you to them. Do you mind holding? No, please connect me. I was on the line for 20 minutes and then I was disconnected anyway. Yeah. And then the other one, I can't remember, but it was also something ridiculous. I think I got connected to a machine and then I never spoke to anybody and I had to put it down. So, yeah, that is a massive problem. And again, this was about 3 years ago, long before COVID hit.
Well, maybe it's gotten better.
You know what? The problem is a lot of like second and third and people like that, students, your students, after you realize no one answers the phone, you just kind of give up and then you never try it ever again. So maybe it's gotten better. You know, and
it's 2020.
Yeah, I know.
Get better in 2020.
Yeah. Well, we got the snotty cut. Okay, that got better.
2021.
Yeah, that's 2021, Clinton. That's 2020.
Another thing that happens is that a lot of people say, well, the university usually says, don't call us, email instead. When you're registered, you're given something called not a study guide, a tutorial letter. A tutorial letter is basically like a little Bible about your module. And it usually has contact details for whoever is teaching at the lecturer, the markers, people like that, right? They say, don't call us, email. And then what usually happens is when you send an email, you either never get a reply or you get a reply a week later, 2 weeks later. I've had stuff that's been a month later. My friend had a funny story. He emailed a lecturer. He got a reply more than a year later, and the lecturer was like, do you still need help with this? And my friend was like, I passed your module last year. I don't need help anymore. Thank you. And they're like, oh, whatever. I don't know if he actually sent that email or if he just told me in WhatsApp. I was very angry about it. Yeah. So, again, as diplomatic as possible, there's a lot of problems at the school, and they've all been made worse by the coronavirus. That being said, UNISA is one of the few schools which are still going ahead with exams, albeit online. And, you know, that comes with a lot of its own problems. You know, I'm speaking to you before I write an exam. I've got an exam on the 1st of June. On the 5th. And we'll basically see I might be all gung-ho and ready to write the exam and it may crash. Unisys websites have a massive history of crashing, and this is something I asked the VP as well. He told me they were investing a lot of money into that. And for now, we're just going to have to take things that have been worked on and improved, and we'll need to see what happens later in May. I'll have stories about all of this. I really recommend that anyone interested in higher education, any university students, not just as UNISA, any university students in the country should give this a read, because what UNISA does with distance education may become the norm going into the future.
And that kind of leads me into the next point, is like, what's happening with the rest of universities? Because I know when we had the Fees Must Fall protests, there was some talk around doing distance learning and remote studying, that sort of stuff. But with this now, this situation, that the need for that has probably been highlighted and had to push forward. I know that there were some universities that had systems in place to allow for online learning, but then you have a similar situation to the one that UNISA faces, where students simply don't have the means to go online and had to make use of campuses in order to go online. It's just, once again, we are being shown how big the digital divide in South Africa is in 2020 still to this day. That kind of leads me into my next point, is what are the alternatives? What other ways can government address education in a way that keeps people apart, like physically distanced, and still, you know, able to learn? Like something that I wanted to say with regards to schools going back, when we were talking about that, was why not invest in getting each kid a tablet or a laptop? And while that's a really great pipe dream to have, it's not really something that's 100% realistic. Mainly because you give a person a tablet and then they're in an area where there's very little coverage for their mobile network of choice or the mobile network that they are forced to use. I have coverage in the area that I'm in, but it's so poor you can't even load a tweet. You know, a tweet without media can't be loaded. So how do you expect a person to stream a full-on video lecture that was recorded at 1080p because the teacher didn't know better and now has a file size of like 200 megs or whatever it may be? What are the alternatives? Do you guys have any ideas?
So I actually thought of something when we were discussing this the other day. So a lot of people know that on certain channels, on I think it's DSTV and the public broadcast, there are channels that do matric revision, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, what if instead of matric revision, we just put all of it on there? So picture this world in your mind, if you will. You're in grade, let's just say grade 6, because it's not one of the big ones like 7 or 12. Okay, so you're in grade 6, you wake up and you're ready for school at 7 or 8. I know it's absurdly early. You know that on channel 303 is the grade 6 channel. Once you sit down, there will be a teacher, and it won't be your teacher. It will be the national teacher for grade 6 public education, right?
Yeah.
The teacher will say, okay, we're going to do, I don't know, every day starts with normal mathematics. And the TV broadcast is an hour of those mathematics. If you miss it, you miss it like a class. You can maybe, if you have a DVR, you can record it, or maybe at night there's another broadcast, right?
A repeat, yeah.
Yeah. The teacher then gets to the end of the lesson, and they say, go to your book. You need to do for homework for tomorrow questions 20 to 30, right?
Yeah.
You, as the student, will then complete questions 20 to 30, and then you can submit it in one of two ways. You can do it online, or you can send it as a physical letter to a school that's close to you where the teachers are still employed. And the teachers at those schools will then mark the homework and send it back. Or it would need to be a weekly, not a daily thing,
because
the post takes a while. But anyway, so the teachers will be at the school. And aside from marking homework and projects and everything, those teachers will also be, I don't know, on call or something like that. So again, if you're in grade 6, you get to the part of the math that's the isosceles triangle. I don't know, I'm just making this up. You don't understand that while you're in the broadcast, you write down isosceles triangle question mark, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of your day, you type up an email or again a letter to your teacher saying, listen, I understood half of it, but I didn't understand X, Y, and Z, which are the points of the triangle. Can you point me to the textbook where that's explained a bit more? And then the teacher will tell you, yes, it's this and this, right? So could that could work because I think the the penetration of broadcast television in South Africa is much higher than internet and smart devices.
Well,
and in this way, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to say that even if you don't have a TV, you could do something similar on radio, although it probably wouldn't be as effective with something like geometry or whatever, because it would be much more difficult. But like, I like your idea, Clinton, because it's catering to as many people as possible. And I hate to use this word, but it's sort of a spray and pray methodology that you need to adapt, right? Yeah. It's like, how do we reach as many people as possible in on as many platforms as possible? Because I think one of the things that is holding a lot of this back, and I might be speaking out of turn, I might be speaking out of my behind, but I think a lot of what's holding this back is the fact that we are still very, careful to not make education a free-for-all, right? You got to go to a school, you got to pay school fees. If you're not paying school fees, there's a special process you must go into. But putting this stuff on like a public broadcaster makes it accessible to anybody.
Yeah.
Putting it up onto YouTube for anybody to download or watch at any time makes it free to anybody. And I think that maybe there's this hesitance from government to go, let's put it online for everybody to use, because then you kind of show, hey, we can do this. We can put it online for anybody to access, or onto a public broadcaster for anybody to access. Like, and I wonder if that's something that's holding this whole thing back. And if it is, I'd say it's time to evolve.
Yeah,
plain and simply.
I think that sentimentality is more apparent in the tertiary education, where the schools want their tuition, right?
Yeah.
They don't want to give an iota of space to freeloaders. I'm maybe speaking more about American schools, which heavily indebt their children. Anyway, and that also leads me to another point. I agree with what you say, Brendan, but another reason schools don't want to do this is tuition. And that's something that has come up again with UNISA at the focal point. A lot of people know that UNISA, compared to other schools, is much cheaper in terms of tuition. By several factors. I was speaking to somebody else and they told me that a year of their degree, of a four-year degree, cost more than my entire degree at UNISA.
Jeez.
So the disparity in prices is absurd. And a lot of the people at those quote-unquote regular schools, let me say the more expensive schools which have depended on in-person teaching, their students are saying, so we're paying several times more, but now we're also online learners not getting the benefit of in-person learning.
Yeah.
How can you as a school charge me that much and you're providing me, I don't know, 50% less? You can't measure education, obviously. But now it's just brought that into light. How can you be charging this much for education? This is absurd.
Yeah, especially when you're not paying for a premises anymore, when you're not paying to help keep up the rent of your lecture hall and that sort of stuff. You're not paying for school Wi-Fi, you're not paying to be able to access a computer lab. Like, all these things start to rank up. And it does kind of lead to the thought of, hey, maybe this COVID-19 thing is going to change the face of education forever. Not just business, not just the way that society interacts with one another, but education as a whole as well. Perhaps that's something that's going to change. Obviously, we are spitballing here at the moment, and we can't tell the future. I don't have a crystal ball. Well, I have a crystal ball, but it's not magical. But yeah,
just for decoration.
Robin, what's your thoughts in this? I think we need to start wrapping up though, so I think everybody put your final thoughts out there and then we'll wrap up for this day.
Yeah, so
sure.
Just in terms of a solution, I don't think anything is going to be feasible or rolled out now, unfortunately, and it might be a bit disheartening to say this, but I think there are going to be a lot of losses as a result of COVID-19. I'm not just talking about loss of life. I think moving forward, though, there's a great opportunity for us to be more innovative in the way that we do things. And for me, it really hinges around connectivity. I know that a few years ago, the city of Johannesburg had an idea to essentially push fiber to every single home, and you would pay for it the same way you pay for your electricity and water. There are also other projects, like I think, if I remember correctly, it's called Project Assise, where essentially creates free Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yeah.
As well. So there are innovative solutions out there. They are not being leveraged in the right way, in my opinion. And I think if we are going to learn from the lessons of COVID-19 and the national lockdown, we need to really address connectivity, because it can take care of a lot of the hurdles and a lot of the obstacles that have been in the way over the past couple of months. That's kind of my thinking.
This is very good points, especially the parts about leveraging existing solutions in a better way. Like, it's great to be able to stream a movie for free, but I think a lot of folks would love to be able to do their exams without having to decide whether do I feed my family or do I do my exams. Yeah. Clinton. Yes,
I want to end off saying, I think the best solution, and it's extremely harsh, in terms of education, we should look at the remainder of 2020 and just call it a wash. Say, we can't do anything more this year. We're going to direct all our resources and all our time until the end of the year on deciding how we're going to shape 2021. And we're going to make that, you know, the template going forward. I think they're wasting time and energy trying to salvage this year. And to all the people all the students at any level of school, I understand how badly missing a year or being pushed back a year will suck. But let me tell you something, getting extremely ill or dying is much worse. And I'm not saying that flippantly. I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on the podcast before, but like you said, Brendan, grade 12 is so stressful for, you know, kids, young adults, that they've had serious injuries. And I'm not even talking about, you know, this is heavy subject, suicide and stuff like that. But from the stress, kids get sick and they go to the ICU, and it can be really bad. And I speak from experience. I won't mention it here. I'll put a link to it. But when I was in grade 12, I almost died due to a sickness that was made worse by stress of final exams. In fact, on my day of my last exam, I got extremely ill, and the next day I was in ICU. So I think I have a unique perspective on all of this, and I really urge you guys to just kill this year. Just let it die. Put all your energy into next year. It will be much better than trying to struggle through and getting sick. Yeah, I'll put a link to that. It's a bit heavy. But yeah, Brendan, do you want to give us your thought and then take us out of here?
Yeah, I think that once again, I'm going to hammer this point home, because as I'm reading this, I'm reading that government is having discussions about banning and unbanning certain substances again. I want to reiterate to President Ramaphosa, if you are listening again this week, hold up your end of the bargain. We need to know how you are making decisions. We need to see the data that is leading you to make decisions. Because while your NCC, the National Corona Command Center, might have a lot of input from stakeholders, there is no possible way that they can know everything. It's just a matter of life. Twitter doesn't believe that it knows everything when it makes decisions. Facebook doesn't believe that it knows everything when it makes decisions. These companies get feedback from a lot of people. And when you are dealing with a crisis such as what we are facing right now, you need to get input from as many places as possible. These questions that we asked today in this podcast are questions that I'm sure a lot of people have, and a lot of people that have children have. And that's the important point here, is you're not asking people to sacrifice themselves now. You're asking them to put their children in direct line of fire of this virus. And that is something that I think a lot of parents are really worried about. And please, government, you need to be clear. You need to hold up the end of the bargain that you said last week, Mr. Ramaphosa, is that you are going to be transparent about how decisions are made, that you are going to loop us in confidence and tell us about things. But we are now a week later since you said that, and there is no sign of government changing, and that absolutely needs to change. So again, my closing words are, give us information. Information is power. Knowledge is power. And right now, the South African people feel absolutely powerless. And I think that's going to wrap it up for today. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. From myself, Brendan Lotz, cheerio. From Clinton Matos.
Bye.
Bye. And from Robin Chessie.
Yeah, best of luck to all the students and teachers going forward.
We'll see you next week. Cheerio. Yeah.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.